I'm Amy, your host of Mother Lessons. I'm a postpartum doula supporting women through the transition into motherhood and after through emotional and physical support. Mothers need other mothers, and through this podcast we can connect and support each other. Mother Lessons was inspired by the word matrescence. The word was coined in the 70s by anthropologist Dana Raphael. It is the transition period of becoming a mother. Similar to a child becoming a teenager through adolescence, our hormones go wild, our hair and skin change, we learn a whole new dynamic to our bodies and our relationships around us. This podcast is for mothers and mothers-to-be. It's here to support mothers in this massive transition and identity shift, which can happen over many years. We will explore all things mothering ourselves and our children, because mothering ourselves is the first step. Samsara Tanna is a birth keeper with a passion for supporting women birthing their babies and helping to care and nurture them as a newborn mother. She has always been drawn to the blood mysteries and the cycles of womanhood. She co-facilitates mother and daughter camps and workshops and circles for women. Samsara is a mother of four wonderful adult children and has been a doula for her own three grandchildren. They have birthed her into a grandmother and a new cycle on her journey through womanhood. Samsara is a trained childbirth educator and a KG hypnobirthing teacher, a birth doula, postnatal doula and counsellor. She delivers courses for both doulas and postnatal doulas with conscious birthing doula training, and runs the Village Birth Keepers midwife and doula practice with independent midwife Kemi Johnson. I'm so excited to get into our chat with this powerhouse of a woman. I first heard of Samsara when I was pregnant with Juniper and I was looking for a birth doula. Samsara was my first choice, alas, she was not available. I saw that she did postpartum packages and my heart yearned for it. No one at the time in my area was offering what she was. When I read her website of what she offered new parents in terms of postpartum doula care, I almost gasped for air and felt so emotional. Every woman should have access to support, and that's sadly far from the truth. So welcome, Samsara, to the podcast.
That's so touching. That's made me feel a bit like overwhelmed.
Oh.
Because we have a joint experience in that, and I think many, many, many women have that experience. So thank you for that welcome.
Well, I just wanted to start with, would you be able to describe what a doula is? First a birth doula and then a postpartum doula from your perspective.
From my perspective, which is probably a little different than the perspective that is introduced to the world and that has become right now. I always explain when people say, what's a doula? Short version, unmedical midwife. And people go, oh, yeah, they clock it into the right kind of thing. That seems to satisfy a lot of people. But when people really kind of want to know what it feels like, what does a doula feel like, what is she doing, who is she, I kind of go to an ancestral memory that we all have and images that we can actually see of birthing women millennia ago. And there's normally three women in that dryad. And it's two women to either side, normally holding her up or offering her something or mopping her brow or sipping her water. And there's one woman catching. And that's normally the protective image of, to me, what represents a doula. And we can look at what the word means, you know, why we brought that word into being, how... And you tell people they kind of look aghast because it means a slave. And the other version, I think, is, you know, the lady in waiting of the queen. And to me, a birthing woman is a goddess. She is a queen. She's the queen of all women in that moment. She's mother. She's the earth. She's bringing forth life. So she needs attendance. She needs total holding, total reverence. Total love and total presence. And so that's my perspective of a doula and experience of a doula, which is possibly different what other people explain.
So. Yeah, that's so majestic and puts the mother first, which is always the way it should be.
Puts her in the center.
And what about your view on postpartum care? What do you think the role of a doula is with postpartum care? And could I just, are your glasses touching the
That's
mic?
what it is. Do you know what? That's what
I can
I
hear it,
always
yeah.
worry with my glasses. I'm going to take them right off. That's why I put my hair back as well, because people have often said that because I fiddle with my hair, fiddle with my glasses. I'll take that right off now. Is that a bit better?
Yeah, I can't hear the tapping anymore.
That's good. Yeah, I know, it's the string. Postpartum, to me, she's one and the same. You know, technically, as soon as a baby is born, you're a postnatal doula or postpartum doula. And my own experience led me to believe that actually the doula was one and the same. And I became a doula before the word was used, many years before. And we were just birth, I like to use the word birth keeper. We were birth attendants. And so it was always part of what I did, is to make sure the mother was transitioning into motherhood in the way that I would have wanted and what I believed all women deserved. So leaving her after a birth and not staying in that bubble with her or in that flow with her postpartum just seemed unthinkable. And so when I started working as a doula and the heart of the doula movement in this country, I came from Australia, though I am English. I'd had all my children in Australia. I was really, really bereft and confused and torn and really shocked that women didn't expect or demand or want or felt they needed that kind of continuity of care. And it was always a conflict for me. So it sort of gradually seeped in. And, you know, with the birth of a few books and the birth of women waking up and realizing how isolated and separated they were from women holding space for them, especially when they'd had doulas, and then the kind of separation after, I think it became you know, more of an enlightened kind of, the light shined on that space. So again, I think I have a different perspective on what a postnatal doula is, and it never sat comfortably in what the model of care started to build, like, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But I'm so excited to be part of the new model of care. I see what's the new old, the remembering of the model of care that we now have is in postpartum doulaing.
Yeah, because I remember just being sort of, had the baby, all the attention was on the birth and the pregnancy.
And the baby. You know,
and the baby, of course. Everyone can't wait to meet the baby. And then, you know, pregnancy is amazing for some. And then suddenly the baby's born and the mother's forgotten. And, you know, the visits are for the baby and the presents are for the baby. And it's just, I mean, yeah, I'm just, as I had Juniper and as the years go past, it's just, that's the, I think food and care for the mother, like, is the number one for me. So I'm, from here, I'm even sending sort of just dry food packages to my friends because I can't cook for them in England. But it's just so important. So the work you're doing is just so important.
Thank you.
I saw that you do hypnobirthing on your website, which I didn't know. I did do hypnobirthing for my birth, and it was the most useful thing I'd learnt and read for my birth. And my partner was in awe of the strength that came from the hypnobirthing and the breathing and all the meditations we did. Why would you advocate for mothers to be learning this technique? And do you have any powerful stories that you could share?
There's a lot of questions in that one.
Yeah.
I'll take it back. I didn't offer hypnobirthing, I think, originally, and I'd known about it, and one of the original old methods I'd known about. I think because I came from a background in a community of meditation and awareness of pain being something one could work with rather than run away from, I think that for me, it was a natural go-to. And I kind of observed over the years that women who'd either got a practice in mindfulness, meditation, yoga, I could work with as a doula really quickly to get to that place where I know that with support and the environment that they would, yeah, pull on those resources. And I think blindly, as working with a doula, I would give them the childbirth education to make choices for themselves that were hopefully going to put them in the place where they could really kind of move through the birth into the birth they wanted, or, you know, or even if it went a different way, they had the tools and they had the support to, you know, transfer to hospital or something like that, or have an unexpected outcome. So I had a bit of attitude about hypnobirthing because of the few experiences I'd had of women who'd done their hypnobirthing and kind of taken that classic belief that it was it had, you know, this method, and if you followed this method you would have X birth. And I saw some really distressing kind of miscommunications like that. So I sort of had an attitude until I met KG Hypnobirthing and start. I've worked with Kemi Johnson in a practice called the Village Birth Keepers, which is a combination of independent midwifery and doula support. And she's an amazing advocate of KG Hypnobirthing and teaches many midwives in hospitals and many other people the skills. But it's not just the relaxation skills or the breathing skills that people assign to what is hypnobirthing. It is a really very clear information transference of choice making, and, you know, where we put that power of choice. So because I was a childbirth educator and that was my background originally in birth work, it seemed to marry, you know, really, really well. And both Kemi and I have wonderful kind of introduction to hypnobirthing stories, and it is something now that we offer all our clients or all our mamas and families and partners, and something that we find a bit hard to work with if a couple aren't choosing that that's the page that we want to be on. And not just from the education, but from the self-empowering techniques that women and couples can use in their birth, because really we just sit there and babies get born. That's the ultimate thing. What a midwife and doula does is just sit in the corner and then babies, you know, come. And I guess, I mean, there's so many stories, you know, of being led to hypnobirthing, but both Kemi and I have such sweet, I think sweet, endearing kind of arrogant stories that we sat in the back of the room going, yeah, right. Okay, and within the first session, being like, "Oh my God, I'm there! I'm on there! I'm on the wagon! I'm on!" Yeah, so I have a lot of gratitude for being taught Catherine Graves's techniques, or not really techniques, or information or practice, how it's put together as a whole practice.
So. That's so useful for mothers to be. Thank you, and I really like that you touched on the point that. Well, I see this from other mothers, that there's this disappointment of if you do use hypnobirthing and your birth doesn't go to plan, which is so many women's birth plan. And mine was as well, actually. Mine didn't go to plan at all. But I found that the hypnobirthing just helped throughout the whole thing, and it made everything special. Even though I ended up in hospital with an epidural, the hypnobirthing helped all the way. It was so, so powerful. So, I definitely advocate for that.
That's wonderful.
Do you remember your growing pains from maiden to mother? Do you remember that transition? And could you sort of give an essence of that?
I love the way that you asked that question. It's really, to me, it is so important. And I love the way we've, many women like bring in the mother blessing into their, you know, pre-birth journey, and I think that's one of the most beautiful rites of passage that we can offer. And I think I've always been obsessed, or it's not the quite word, impassioned by women's rites of passage, and it's always you know, since I first can remember way back. And I think I was welcomed very beautifully by my mother, although not the way I would have necessarily wanted it. It was still really, you know, I never felt kind of unseen. I always felt very seen, and came to being a young woman quite early. And I think coming into motherhood was just an extension of that. There wasn't kind of this like break in my journey. It just became, I love to use, like, I have a tattoo of the one of the hypnobirthing symbols of the flower opening. It just felt like I was opening more and more fully. And you know, we often use the rose as a symbol of a blooming, you know, blooming woman. And I love roses, and that's my, you know, love. And to me, that symbolizes everything around my, you know, journey. And I think one of the reasons I did become a birth worker is from my birth experience. But my journey into motherhood was very different than my birth. My birth was very normal, but I felt very alone because I'd moved to Australia and I was totally alone and I had no idea. And it went well and I really enjoyed it. And I had the blessing of the fact that in the days that I had my first baby, you spent 2 weeks in hospital. And that was the normal. And it was wonderful. And I became a mother in that time because I was mothered by the midwives. And I was like very gently held into, you know, my first feeding experience. And I remember coming down from the ward where I had the baby in the birth center down to we had a little private room, like little cells all in this long corridor with all the other mums. It was amazing to have your own space, albeit the size of a public toilet. It was,
you don't
just
need
tidy.
Any more really, you're on the bed, right, most of the time.
Just you and your baby. On the end of my bed was all these folded square nappies. It was in the day of square nappies. I remember crying. It was symbolic for me of how I didn't know how to mother, and I just remember this arm going around me, and this midwife who was probably my age just putting her arm around me and said, you know, don't worry, you know, you will be a mother by the time you walk out here. You will have all those skills. We will teach you those skills. And I walked out like feeling I ruled the world. I was, you know, so empowered by that experience and that supporting. And I think that birthed me as a birth keeper, because I didn't at the time go, oh, that's what made it for me. In retrospect, I looked, if I hadn't had that, and which I see most women not having now, and I didn't have my mother there, I longed for that female companionship and those wise words. So any wise words that were given to me, I just hungered for. And that was my transition into motherhood, is being supported by an elder or a woman bringing her wisdom and her comfort and her knowledge, which I had none. And you know, those little bits of knowledge, I at that time, I just, you know, was woman, was mother, was the goddess, you know. She birthed me, she helped to birth me as a mother.
Wow, that's really, really rare experience though for people to have now, isn't it? I had to stay in hospital for 5 days after my birth, and I loved it as well, because I did have all the beautiful, I didn't like the doctors coming in and pressurizing you for things, but whenever the midwives came in, you know, with the breastfeeding, it's just so helpful. So that is a positive about, you know, if you do end up in hospital with a home birth plan.
It is.
Yeah. And did you find that you had, when after that beautiful experience, when you came home, did you have a bit of a shock then being a bit more on your own with it? Or
really strangely, when I had my baby, which was quite young, I was in my very early 20s, I'd come from living in a community for 6 or 7 years, and were living in a community house. And even though it wasn't a community with heaps of babies and everything, there was a great honouring of the feminine from that community. And really strangely, we had a couple living downstairs in the bottom area of the house who, I think he was in his 50s then or something. He was older, but he'd lived in a commune for years back in the day where women had lots of babies. And I remember him, strangely, a man, but in his very calm, wise way, he used to come and sit with me and go, "You're amazing. You've just got it. You're just an earth mother," and all those kind of affirming kind of things that you want to hear. And what happened is I felt very abandoned by the system, but that was fine by me. By the time I walked out of the hospital, I felt like I didn't need it. Yeah. I had everything I had within my home. And strangely, you know, my partner was flailing about, and I don't remember him. I think he was just worrying about keeping everything together. But that was quite symbolic of what I see happens. It was the other people around me who just offered that calm holding. And I was lucky to live with people. It wasn't necessarily wise women around me, but it was just wise elder people around me that just gave me that that support.
I mean, that goes into one of my questions so well, about creating a village, because it sounds like you sort of went in naturally and had a village there. But nowadays, most people don't feel they have that. We live in our little units. We might be lucky enough to live in a little town where we bump into people, but we really have to make an effort to make that village. What would be your sort of wise words for a young mother, just, or a pregnant woman just about to go into being a mother? How can you lay the foundations for a strong village?
It's a wonderful phrase that's got built up, you know, finding our village. And I think it's like many of those sort of fashionable or kind of words that come in. I think we have a preconception what that means. And I think that can, like the hypnobirthing, lead us into feel that we've failed. And so that would be the first thing I say, because I would say is to, you know, what is our image of what, you know, what is our ideal of what a village means? I think that would be the first thing to question ourselves. And I think it is in the preparation. And I think it is a lot of people kind of have that feeling of like, oh, well, birth is natural. It just happens. Yes, it does. But I think from your experience and from many women's experience, when we prepare and really educate ourselves, you know, of course, women who don't and go into it blind can have really, really positive experiences. But, you know, women often feel disempowered by the system around them. So setting up that to start with is really good. So it is about the team that we create around us for our birth. And team isn't, you know, the fashionable word, but it's like it does bring that kind of thing of like, well, who's supporting us? Who is on the sidelines,
paid and unpaid?
Exactly. Both. And so I think that takes you onto postnatal as well. And I think, you know, very few couples and women prepare postnatal time. And one of the most kind of misguided views is that women expect so much of their partners and expect their partner to be everything, the most perfect birth support and then the most perfect carer afterwards. And then it's going to be some romantic 2-week bubble on their own. And very rarely have I seen that happen. And in fact, the reverse happens, that the tensions and the fractions build up, and the women's need for protection by their partner, but not necessarily caring by their partner. It's the same, you know, if you're having a period and you have period cramps and your partner goes, oh, that's a shame. And, you know, maybe a lot of them can have really sweet sympathy, but another woman then goes, oh, you know, you just have to give you the face and you know that they know and we're there together. It's the same thing postnatally. And, you know, a village doesn't have to mean a large group of people. It can mean one or two. And at different times during our postnatal period, I mean, we're always postnatal. I'm still postnatal. It's like this idea that we go back to normal, a bit like, you know, what we're experiencing now in this time of like between the worlds. It's almost like a birth and postnatal time. We don't know what's on the other side, and you know, some of us feel really unprepared in this time, and we don't have the tools with us. So I think you know, if women can, you know, prepare for their birth, yes, but then get to a point where they really, really sit down and practically work out, first of all, their postnatal time, and on that list be someone that they can cry over the phone to, or, yeah, or you know, feel that they can be vulnerable with, because not accepting that you're going to be vulnerable afterwards is going to be the first hurdle that we have to get over, and we need someone to feel that we can hold us there. So I think preparation is key, and that's not everyone's bag, and it's sometimes having to face truths in that preparation. And it might be that we don't, I know I certainly didn't have any of the village I would have wanted around me, but I had to accept. And it is about asking, and it is about accepting. It is about allowing ourselves to be vulnerable, to allow people to help us. Women so feel they have to be this super strong person, and they don't want to accept that they are vulnerable, not weak, but vulnerable when they're postnatal. And asking for that is so hard for many women, and accepting it.
And managing expectations was a really big thing for me, and so many people, mothers around me, just that expectation that things are going to be a certain way, and peaceful and beautiful and bubble-like, exactly like you said. But then the lack of sleep gets in the way, and, you know, the partner may sleep in another room, and then that's a shift. You know, there's all sorts of things that happen that I think I wish a woman had told me all those realities and grounded me, and that kind of brought me down from my sort of, I don't know, I was in a bubble. And I think it's really helpful for women to hear the reality. And everyone's got a different reality, but I think it's really helpful hearing people's stories.
Yeah. A lot of the women, say, and you haven't said it in that way, it's like, why didn't you tell me?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the classic. And I think one of the reasons in my postnatal work is, and someone was asking me the other day in a Zoom call around postnatal care, is like, you know, oh, maybe it'll be after a couple of weeks that I need you, because that's when my partner goes to work. And I say, well, I don't work like that. I come in as soon as you're at home, because having somebody there to remind you and to hold you through those first days and first weeks is what's going to give you the strength when your husband goes back to work in 2 weeks time, or when you don't have that early kind of support that most women get a little bit of it, but that's when it goes, and that's when you feel exhausted. So those are the weeks that you really need to pick in that, you know, pick your team or your support or the your close people to you, so that, you know, once you're 2 weeks, 6 weeks postpartum, then you start building your village of people to what you need, you know, what you need more, hopefully, by then.
Yeah, so laying the foundations and then building on top of that. I keep getting tingles whenever with all these things that you're talking about. It's all very close to my heart. What do you think the role of a mother is?
Well, that's a huge question. Wow. Does it come to back to the question, what's the role of a woman as well? It's like, I think the role of the feminine is up for grabs. it's growing constantly, especially in our Western conversation at the moment. It goes through many phases of feminism, as one would say. You know, we're in third wave right now, and I think a lot of younger people are readdressing what being a woman and that ultimately what being a mother means. And I think, you know, all women, all people with a womb, all people who identify even as feminine, have that mothering quality. You know, I often train doulas who are either men or women who don't have babies, but they're quite special because they have that quality, that essence of being present. And it is about presence to what's moving and changing inside themselves, and ultimately turning up for our family, our child, and then our family, or our creation, what we're birthing, our mothering creation. So, and I hear at the moment as well, quite often I've got a, you know, hearing that they're disappearing because mothers are mothering 24/7 right now and don't have any support or outlet in their homes. And I feel a lot of them are saying they're just disappearing. They're just becoming, they're just reacting to the situation. And I think, I've kind of lost track what you asked, but I think the role of the mother is to keep coming back to ourselves as women, and then we find our role as mother. And I think it's different for anyone. And even if it's a 10-minute snatch in the toilet on your own with the door shut, miracle if you ever get it. But, you know, carving out, you know, that wonderful other fashionable thing of self-care. But to me, it would be more self-reflection than self-care. You know, everyone's self-care. I don't like a massage particularly. It's not my thing. But, you know, I love a long bath. So it's finding those things that bring us back home to ourselves and what our path is and what our journey is and who we are and all those questions. And I think once we start to really work with that, then our role becomes more paramount, you know, like becomes more clear. The path becomes more clear.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's so in-depth. Thank you.
Thank you.
I saw that you also do placenta encapsulation, and I love I loved my placenta in little capsules and tincture, and I got it all because it's I don't know, I felt like it really helped. It's hard to tell with these things, but I do feel like it really helped. Can you just sort of give a brief outline of why is that beneficial for women to have and do?
I mean, there's still, I can go back to what it is and a little bit of a journey of why it seemed very obvious to me, because, I mean, the science still really hasn't come out. I haven't really kept up with the most up-to-date ones, and I'm sure it's still being worked on, and it's still being offered at this time and, you know, still a thing, and hopefully will carry on being. I think for me, it was way back between my first and second child. I remember my first child remembering his birth, which is one of those really strange things. Wow. If you have a very pre-verbal two-year-old who can express themselves, they say that children do. But one of the things he said to me, which he was most distressed about when he knew that I was having another baby, is that he literally said, don't let the man cut her tummy. It will hurt.
Oh, my God.
He explained what optimal cord clamping, you know, or extended cord clamping was to me. Wow. And we had a home birth of the second baby, and we gave him the choice to tell us when to cut her cord, which was way longer. We were always still cutting cords really early on in those days. I mean, we're talking 30 years ago. And he insisted on waiting for 20 minutes. I realized is that he had a real connection, and the whole kind of thing around the placenta became very obvious to me that, oh, this wasn't waste product. This, you know, wasn't something to blindly throw away. It was something to relate to. And by the time I had my third and fourth, I had a lotus birth with my third, which was when I didn't cut the cord and I used herbs on the placenta to keep it and preserve it. And then by the fourth, I used it, and that was before the days that I understood what placenta encapsulation was, because people weren't doing it, never heard about it. It was kind of like making a patty out of it, or you know, putting in food and things like that. So I was it was a growing awareness for me that this was vitally something vitally important that we were missing out. So at that point I was investigating, researching what to do with it. And you know, one of the beautiful stories in Australia is that you should bury your placenta on the earth. And they have a beautiful story about how the placenta is imprinted with your soul's journey. And that when you bury it into the earth, the mother holds it for you. And that when you spill your first seed, or when you have your first bleed, upon the earth, the mother reawakens your soul's journey, and you know what journey you're on. And to hear these sort of stories made me so passionate that this is such an important piece that we're missing as women, and that we can reclaim. So part of the making the remedies and the placenta remedies out of that. It's just a continuation for me. And it literally, it's from the experience of seeing what it does to women that I don't really care about the science anymore because I know what it does.
Could you tell us some of those stories?
I think one of the sweetest stories I have is of a mama that I doulaed twice. And the first time she had her placenta, but it's like I took it away and just presented it and brought her the pills back, which is all very kind of like, you know, we take a vitamin, we take a placenta pill, they look the same, you don't engage with it much. The second baby, she said, oh, I want you to make a placenta print, like make a picture of my placenta, which you can do on watercolor painting. And by then she said, oh, and I want a smoothie out of it straight away. And I went, you know, that's something else we offer. It's only a tiny bit, and people get really concerned it's going to taste really, you know, it doesn't. And I give them a joke, you know, I promise you, if you don't drink it, I'll drink it. I mean, I wouldn't, but it's like, I know that it tastes fine and it's totally going to be palatable. Yeah. And her mother and her sister were going to be around at the birth. They were looking after the other baby. And I have this wonderful picture because I kind of brought it in and I was keeping it a little bit quiet. And very slowly, like the toddler came over and she was leaning over the thing saying, I want to see it, because I was trying to pull it apart, you know, like to keep it to make it a print first of all before I started washing it and preparing it. And then she was hanging over looking. And then the mother and the sister kind of were hanging over looking. And eventually I made a smoothie out of it. And the bizarrest thing is they all went in and it was like became like this ceremony where they all shared a little sip. It was like really bizarre. But it was like they were a family that you could never imagine in a million years. Like in the, they were all like, ugh. But it was almost like it was hypnotic. Yeah. And the mummy had been quite tired and it'd been a long birth and she was really, really like drained. And you literally could see the colour come back into her cheeks and the kind of like the wind come back into her, like the air, like second wave. And that was like within an hour and a half, 2 hours of delivering her baby and placenta. So I just love that it creates magic. It is a mystery. I like Robin Lim calls it like the forgotten chakra or something. It's like there's a beautiful, like it's a, we've forgotten it, and the magic of what it can bring apart from the, you know, the long term over 6 weeks. I really see women who haven't taken it and who have taken it you can't compare, you know, if you haven't had a baby before, you don't know. But women who had it on their second baby go, oh my gosh, you know, I shouldn't be recovering so fast, but because I remember my first, but I'm feeling great. You know, it really levels out women. They feel strengthened by it, you know, nourished by it, giving them back what they've depleted during their birth and pregnancy. But long term, you know, you say you have a tincture, and there are other remedies you can use from it. And both my daughter and my daughter-in-law did it for my grandchildren. I remember my daughter, being my daughter, is a bit kind of like, yeah, I'm okay, like, you can do my placenta, it's fine. And I just was like bringing her one in every morning with her morning juice, you know. And after about 2 or 3 weeks, I remember saying, oh, how are you finding the person? Oh my God, I'm going to learn how to do it. Every woman has to have this. It's amazing. She says, I'm almost salivating, waiting for the next one. I'm like, okay, all right, you're a convert. That's fine. And the same for my daughter-in-law. My youngest granddaughter's a year and a half, and she's really struggling with her milk at the moment because she's teething and feeding a lot. And she was feeling really down, and her menstrual cycles come back. And she was like, I said, have you got any pills left? She said, oh, yeah, I've got some in the freezer.
Oh, my gosh, she had some left. Wow.
Yeah, she took some out, and she said, amazing. Like, she really felt her milk build up again, something balanced in her hormones. She just said, that's good. So
I've got some of the homeopathy pills left because I had some of those. Do you find those powerful? Because I haven't really used much of those. I've got one for juniper and one for myself.
I mean it's the whole story with homeopathy. It would be like, would you see it make a difference to your baby? Probably you would observe it better in that than in yourself. And that's true. Would say that, I mean, I love homeopathy and I would definitely do that now if I was having a baby. I would do the whole lot like you. I would cover every corner. But I think homeopathy for me and how I look at the remedy is that it's a constitutional, and it's something that I would say use in transition. And sometimes through transition, it's not till retrospect that we can look back and say, oh, I see I needed it and something changed when I took it now. So I think that's how I would say around homeopathy. Yeah. I have done it for, or I don't do the homeopathy. I have given it to some people, but it's not always something I go to first. So just get the placenta in.
Would you say that the placenta in a smoothie fresh is much more potent than the capsules because they've been dried, or?
Very possibly. And I think it feels like it's absolutely at that time when women in the, I take enough off when I'm working postnatally to make sure that my mamas have a smoothie every morning until their pills are ready. So for the first or three mornings, so that there's no drop in time that they're receiving their own placenta remedy back. So it's just a tiny bit that I take off for two or three pieces I put in the fridge and I make into a smoothie for them for the first two or three days. So I don't know if it's more powerful. I think it's something about connection as well. It keeps women connected to their birth process still, that they're receiving it every morning. And you know, all the science buffs would sort of say, you know, what's in it and all the hormones and all the nutrients that they are receiving are definitely a benefit as well. But you know, I'm not always up on the geeky science of it all. I just see what I can see.
Exactly, that's the most powerful. Oh, it makes so much sense. I've got one more question before I'm going to ask the two questions that I ask all my guests. So what do you most love about your work being a doula?
It's really interesting. At this time of great change, all my teaching and all the traveling to run courses and thing has fallen away right now, the one-to-one like that. And what arose out of that was sitting in the birth room, was sitting and being with mamas. And I remember sharing that with Kemi, because Kemi and I are around the same age. I've worked longer than her in the birth room, but it's kind of like we were getting quite burnt out sometimes, and we were really keeping an eye on each other, that we were supporting each other to really, you know, not take on so many mamas, or, you know, trying to work it out basically how to get through. And we both came back to that conclusion, like, oh my gosh, this seems the most important thing to us, is to be with our mamas, to be present with them, whether that's in the birth room or, and that's in my postnatal work, that's also the continuation of that. I'm not rushing around doing things, I'm bringing things for them, and I'm being there for them. I'm sitting at the end of their bed, I'm listening to their debriefs and their stories and their breastfeeding stories, and holding the baby while they have a shower. I'm just being. And I think out of this time, what rose for me is that's what I do, that's what I love about being a birth keeper. It was all the what I should be doing and what I ought to be doing, and you know, what is good for the practice or everything. And that kind of all just fell away. And both Kemi and I went, oh, wow, that's what it is. That's what it is for us.
Mm. Well, it kind of ties into what you said, the role of a mother is as well, that presence and being. So what three books would you recommend a mother read before she, whilst she's pregnant or just as she's given birth? Can you think of any?
That is just like such a hard question.
I know.
And
so
I was
many,
just like, oh my god, I actually snuck one in. I think most women, wherever doulaing they come back to Ina May's Spiritual Midwifery, which is like, when I looked at it the other night, it's so far from, you know, where we are right now. It was written such a while ago, and it's, you know, but you know what it is? It's their village.
Yeah,
they have community, and I think that's what speaks to women. Plus it has, you know, it was written for midwives, the original one, and it, you know, really speaks to education and educating themselves. It speaks to, you know, how important their community and their loved ones are around them, and empowers women. So I, you know, there is her new version of just a childbirth education, a book, childbirth book, but I think Spiritual Midwifery, I just can't go past it. Really strangely, the second one is I was just making sure I actually had the right list. The second one is really, really underrated, I think, and it's Sarah Buckley's book, Gentle Mother. I'm really, really sorry.
That's
gonna
okay.
I'm going to put my notes on, because I sort of had to think, oh, what would I mean, I have a heap of books that I give to my moms, sure, and say, I sort of can tailor them to what I think they might get the most out of. Yeah. But I think Gentle Birth, Gentle Mothering by Sarah Buckley. Okay. She's an obstetrician from three generations back in Australia. And I think she's wildly underestimated in the general kind of, but it's so informative and it's so science-based. You know, the research is that big compared to the book. I mean, there's so many references. It's, you know, if you're really after that kind of empowering choice-making, decision-making book, she has all the references into the science and really empowering choices. Okay. So I think that's really, I think one of the most important books out at the moment, Kemi and I used to talk about that, we didn't always recommend to women, but I think really now we should. And every woman should really, even I've just given it to my daughter who's planning a baby, is Give Birth Like a Feminist by Millie Hill. I really feel that it's... Give Birth Like a Feminist. Mm. And it's a really, it's a newish one, sure how old it is, can't you? It's a really important conversation.
Oh, that sounds great.
It's enough already. We need to really speak up around, you know, what's okay and what's not okay in the birthing room and for us as women and mothers.
Yeah.
I have to sneak one more in.
Do it.
I have to. Because it's a postpartum one. It's not a birth.
Oh, good. Good.
Yeah. It's The Fourth Trimester by Kimberly Ann Johnson.
Oh, my gosh. She's amazing.
Yeah.
She's incredible. Everyone should read that.
I think everyone should read that. And I had to sneak that one in because it's not a birth one.
Yeah.
It's like postnatal one.
Yeah.
I do give that to, or suggest that all my mums get hold of a copy of that and read that. I think it's amazing.
Her podcast is really great as well.
Powerful stuff. Yeah. And really, really needed right now.
Yeah, she's got such a different perspective on things, and she's just unabashedly herself and just amazing. Yeah, she's great. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Those are great. So what would you say, last question, what would you say to your newborn mother self with the experience you have now? What advice would you give? What wise words?
It took me 4 babies to work out what postpartum care should look like. I absolutely smashed it by my 4th. I think as a newborn mother, I would literally say what it is I say to my own mothers or my own doula mothers, or what I gave to my daughter and daughter-in-law, which was 6 weeks of my time I spent with them, looking after them. And I set that up for myself for my 4th baby, and I just felt like this is it. This everyone, I had 6 weeks of food bought every day. Mm. It was amazing. It was macrobiotic food. And it was funny. It was like, it wasn't like I went for the top of everything. It's like we had to trade care and things like that. And I also brought in a woman every morning. She wasn't a postnatal doula. She was my ex-partner's ex-legal secretary who wanted to go into birth work. I mean, it was like totally someone random, but she was older and wiser and calm. I knew by 4 babies that I was okay and what to do for myself, but I needed someone just to hold me. And you know, she would come in every morning, she would sit on my bed, she would hold the baby as I showered, she would bring me my morning teas and just be there for me and just listen to my stories, and I would listen to hers, and I would just hear her walking around with my baby, clearing up the breakfast things after my other children had gone to school, and just be there for me. That's an alarm going off in my house, but
that's all right. Wow, that's amazing.
So I think that's what I would say for myself.
Yeah. It's so underrated, isn't it? Postpartum care. It's been amazing, Samsara. Thank you so much
for
taking the time to talk to us. And
Let me just see you again.
Yeah, I know,
so
I know.
Amazing what you're doing. Such an amazing thing. Yeah.
Thank you, Samsara. Yeah. Thank you so much. I'll send you everything when it's ready. Yeah.
That would be lovely. Oh, well done. And I look forward to what you're offering to the rest of them. I'm so excited you're doing Postnet.
I had tingles all over my body talking with Samsara throughout that whole conversation. She is such an amazing, she just is amazing, and laid out the importance of postpartum support so clearly and gave so many wisdoms about matrescence. I have so many more questions for her. Let's get her in on again. And please do share this podcast with someone who you think would benefit from the information, and most support is when you tag both me and Samsara on your social platforms. It's the best way to share our work. Thank you so much for listening and being here. I'm so grateful to be doing this.